Hey there, guys. I wanted to drop in real quick to talk to you about a brand new offer that I've put together just for you. It truly is going to revolutionize the way that you do business. I am offering a 90-minute strategy session that's also going to give you a visual roadmap that will guide you over the next 6 months to be able to accomplish any author goal you want to make happen. So here's the thing. We all need some one-on-one guidance sometimes. And the whole idea behind this is to give you the one-on-one personalized experience that you're really craving and get you on the road to your greatest success, right? That's all we really want for you. So if you're curious about how this is going to work, head over to authorrevolution.org/visual map and learn more about it today.
Welcome to the Author Revolution podcast, where change is not just embraced, it's celebrated. I'm Carissa Andrews, international best-selling author, indie author coach, and your navigator through the ever-evolving landscape of authorship. Are you ready to harness the power of your mind and the latest innovations in technology for your writing journey? If you're passionate about manifesting your dreams and pioneering new writing frontiers, then you're in the perfect place. Here, we merge the mystical woo of writing with the exciting advancements of the modern world. We dive into the realms of mindset, manifestation, and the transformative magic that occurs when you believe in the impossible. We also venture into the world of futuristic technologies and strategies, preparing you for the next chapter in your author career. Every week, we explore new ways to revolutionize your writing and publishing experience. From AI to breakthrough thinking, this podcast is your gateway to a world where creativity meets innovation. Whether you're penning your first novel, or expanding your literary empire, whether you're a devotee of the pen or a digital storyteller, this podcast is where your author revolution gains momentum. So join me in this journey to continue growth and transformation. It's time to redefine what it means to be an author in today's dynamic world. This is the Author Revolution Podcast, and your author revolution starts now. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Author Revolution Podcast. This week, I'm really excited to bring to you an interview with one of my dear friends. I can call her a friend now. She's actually been a student of the Millionaire Author Manifestation course, and she's also in our mastermind. But what's been really neat about getting to know Christine is understanding money from a different perspective. So like for me, I teach money and I teach money mindset. I understand money. I just am not a huge fan of like sitting down with my books. And it's not that I don't know how. It's not that I don't get it. It's just that it's not as exciting, I guess, as other things in my life or in my business. But what's been really neat is that, you know, talking to Christine or reading her books has given me new insight into maybe it still can be fun. Like maybe I can actually enjoy doing some of this stuff in a new way, right? And like manifesting money is, it's a different vibe, the manifestation of money versus like how to set up systems where money works for you. How do you create flow and ease and, you know, cushions and all the things that bring kind of a joy or a balance or an ease to your life as a creative entrepreneur? Because that's what we are, right? We have some months that are great, some months that are a little bit slimmer. We have things that we're trying to work on. And so when you have kind of a broader or different perspective on how to put your money to work for you, it can really, really benefit your like mental status, your mental health, your like everything. And so incorporating some of the tips and tricks that Christine has been offering both in her books and in person, and then just like getting excited for this new, she has a book club that's going to be coming out. We're going to talk about that in the interview, and like getting involved into a group of like-minded women, because this group is for women, to talk about money in a way that just really feels good. That's going to be some powerful stuff. And of course, because she's also like a manifesting master as well, to me, it's like such an exciting opportunity to get involved and to be a part of that particular group. So of course, by the time this recording comes out, yes, I am already enrolled. And yes, I can't wait to read her new book. But we're going to talk about all the things. We're going to, you know, discuss kind of her role as a financial advisor, how everything's come together. She has so much information and such a wealth of knowledge to share. And I can't wait to introduce you to her. So let's get to it.
Well, hi, Christine. Welcome to the Author Revolution podcast. This is a very exciting episode. I'm so excited to bring you on and have a conversation about all things like financial empowerment. But before we get started, do you want to tell my audience a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, my name's Christine Lucan. I'm known as the Financial Dignity Coach. I have been coaching individuals and couples for, oh my gosh, like 16 years now. So I'm like the OG of financial coaches.
Love it.
I'm also an author. So obviously that's how you and I got connected. So I have written and published 3 books, and I'm getting ready to publish my 4th book. They're all about some aspect of personal finance, but I always tell people, I don't do this kind of work because I've always been perfect with my finances. In fact, it's quite the opposite. So I crashed and burned, thankfully, young in my life at age 26, and I really learned that it wasn't just about the head knowledge of finances, that people can know what to do and still not do it.
Oh yeah.
And there's a big emotional factor in it. And so I've pretty much become known as the go-to authority on money and emotions.
I love that so much. And it is so true. Like you can be totally head smart, understand how to keep your books, understand math, be great at it, and still not want to go into QuickBooks and do the balancing. Like,
exactly.
Might be speaking from experience here.
The financial confessional is open.
Right. Oh, it's not my favorite thing ever, but it's fine. It's fine. We're manifesting a financial advisor. We're manifesting people who can help me balance books so I don't have to do it anymore because it's not something I enjoy.
Yeah. And so it's okay to delegate.
Right? That is definitely my next ticket to delegate.
Awesome.
Universe is taking that. So let's talk about those books. You've written Money is Emotional, Financial Dignity After Divorce, and Managing Money Like a Boss. And then you're also working on your 4th, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
What inspired you to write these books? Like what was the calling there?
Well, the first one was definitely my story just needing to get out there. And what I realized, so I wrote Money is Emotional and published it in 2017. And, you know, I had been coaching people, et cetera. And, it just really came forth to me that there wasn't a lot of information about the emotional side of money. So when I first started coaching, behavioral psychology was really in its infancy. Like people weren't talking about it at all. And so as I started to come across things in the psychology world, it was like, okay, well, this is great. You know, this theory is great, but how does it apply to real life? And most people aren't going to go reading psychology articles or psychology books to help them improve their personal finances. They just want to know that a tool works.
Right.
And a basic explanation of why it works. And so I started to realize that, you know, the methodology that I was taught when I got my coaching certification, that some of it just didn't work for certain people. For some people it did. And then I just got really curious, like, why is this not working for this person? And can we tweak something? And I started to bring in some of those things I was learning about psychology without all the psychobabble, right? It was just like, okay, let's try this tool and let's see how this works for this person. And by the time I wrote the book, it was like, okay, the how-tos are out there. You know, you could read Dave Ramsey or Susie Orman, and they're going to give you this list of things that you need to do. And they're basically saying like, okay, you know, you want different results. You need to change your actions. Here's the actions you need to take. But they weren't dealing with the motivation that causes you to take action. And so
right.
You and I know that our thoughts, our words, and our feelings are really what fuels the action or can keep us stuck in inaction. And so if we don't deal with those things, we can find ourselves stuck in these unhealthy patterns. And so that's really why I wrote my first book, because I wanted to give everybody this basic blueprint and understanding of here's what's going on in your emotions. Here's how you can harness your emotions and use the power of them to do the things that need to be done to improve your finances. But here's also like hacks and tricks to kind of mute those emotions and turn down the volume so that you don't stay stuck in those unhealthy patterns.
Yeah, it's so good. And I'm obviously reading Money is Emotional right now. And I love how you also pull in, like, if you're a part of a couple, to pull in your partner and be talking about things together. And you even, you know, mentioned like the emotional aspects that, you know, if you're hiding something or if you're doing, you know, something goofy, like be open, transparent, like get it on the table, be obviously aware that emotions might run high so that you come in knowing together that like you have to be constructive with your criticism, right? I love that. Yes. It's so good.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, I have emotional baggage from my past. You have emotional baggage from your past. Our spouses and partners, they come to the table with different baggage. And if none of us have examined that and we don't have self-awareness about that, then it's like, it's not like two halves make a whole, right? You think like, oh, one's a saver, one's a spender. We put them together and then we get something healthy. Not necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you do have to have a lot of grace with your spouse or partner when you're talking about financial things. And it does help to, when you're in a relationship with someone, just to ask them, how did your parents handle money? And do you agree with that approach? That'll start opening up some very interesting conversations, because sometimes people act exactly like their parents. Sometimes they act completely opposite. Right. They either comply with what their parents did or they rebel against what their parents did based off of how they felt about it at the time. And that can open up some really interesting discussions and just really give you understanding of where they're coming from. Because then you can have more grace with your partner if you know, oh, gosh, they went through, you know, these uncomfortable and somewhat painful things as a result of what their parents did with money, so you can have compassion on them.
Right, right. It's so good. So obviously, as a financial expert, and then transitioning to also being an author, did you find writing books challenging? Like, how did you balance the technical aspects of finance with the need to make sure that the content was accessible, especially to women and like creative entrepreneurs?
Yeah. Well, here's the interesting thing. I've always been a writer, and I always knew I was going to write books. I still have like my first story that I wrote when I was in first or second grade. I think it was about a horse.
Love it. It was so cute.
But I was the biggest nerd. I thought if I could get paid $1 million and be a librarian, like I would have died and gone to heaven. And so I always loved books. And I think I always knew at the back of my mind that I was going to write a book. I just didn't know it was going to be about money. And, you know, when in balancing those two things, what I had come to realize through giving presentations, through writing blog posts, you know, and different things of that nature, that people responded best when I had that combination of here's the problem, here's what to do about it, and here's a story that shows the transformation. And that's really what I tried to bring to the books that I've written. And in fact, Money is Emotional, the outline of the book started with my blog posts. So I basically said, what are the different areas of personal finance that I want to talk about? Have I already written something in that vein? Let me see what's there. Do I still like it? I mean, because sometimes I'm like, oh, this is crap. I'm not gonna I'm just gonna have to write that chapter
the
from
an author.
Scratch.
Yeah.
Right. But sometimes it was like, okay, well, this is at least the bare bones of a chapter that I can flesh this out. And even if I wrote it 3 or 4 years ago, I've got more things to say, more things to add to it. I've got more client examples, and then I would bring in, you know, different quotes from authors of books that I had read or other people that influenced me in the personal finance space. And I really used that formula for the first three books. The fourth book is a little different, and it's interesting because it's taken me longer to write, and it's my shortest book.
Isn't that the way it goes sometimes?
Yes.
Like, why? Why is this so hard now? Oh, goodness. Okay, so your books and programs target often like emphasizing financial empowerment for women. And like, obviously this demographic is pretty powerful, but what drove you to focus specifically on women, even though some of them obviously talk about couples as well, but, and like, how did that impact like the effectiveness of your own financial coaching? Like, was it so that you could niche down and really hone in, or was it literally you were seeing women kind of floundering? What was going on there?
Well, I think it was a couple things. You know, just the general statistics about women and money are pretty disturbing. In fact, I did a whole entire podcast episode. I host Money is Emotional podcast, and I did one about girl math. And in there, I talk about how, you know, women are still behind men. I mean, we know that, you know, women make like 83 or 84 cents on the dollar to men, but minority women, the situation is way worse. It's like 65 cents to the dollar. And the financial literacy statistics, like, you know, we're recording this in April and it just happens to be financial literacy month. So great timing, right?
Right.
But it was just like, you know, we talk about all this women's empowerment and women are earning more money, but we're still behind in the education. And I think a lot of women think it's hard, it's boring, I was not great at math, I don't want to do this. And the truth of the matter is, like, the math is the easy part because there's all these amazing tools that can help us do the math. I mean, you have in your hand, like, you carry a phone, there's a calculator right there. There are so many free tools and free apps and low-cost things that can do the hard part for you. But I want women to have a good relationship with money. And I talk a lot about how, you know, if you treated a person the way you treat money, would that person want to hang out with you?
Right.
So
yeah,
if you're talking,
constantly like, come here, but pushing them away. Why do we do that?
Yeah. I mean, that's like the boyfriend that's like, are we doing anything on Saturday? Never mind, I'm too busy.
Right? What is that?
Yeah, but if you think about, you know, how are you talking about money? And it's a great exercise to record what you think and say about money for a week. And then you just kind of look at that list and say, do I want these things to be true? Like, it's hard to make money. As soon as money comes in, it goes right back out. It's like, right. Oh my gosh, what are you doing?
Why are you bringing that kind of reality to you?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, women are generous. When women have money, they are usually good with it. And I think this is the lie that we tell ourselves that, oh, I'm just not good with this. We can be good with this. All of us have the ability. We have the capacity to do well with money. Now, does it come easier to some people than others? Of course it does. However, we all have the capacity and we don't get the competence and the confidence to manage money well until we educate ourselves and start practicing. So that's really where the competence comes in. It's evaluating, okay, what areas do I need to strengthen? And then going and getting that help, going and getting that education, and then just doing the thing.
Right. Yeah, it's like we trip ourselves up, making it more complicated in our head. And it really is just like, follow the steps and don't let your emotions get away with you. You know? It's like, Yeah.
Yes.
Like, I will spend so much time trying to avoid having to balance my books. And then when you finally sit down and do it, it's like, this isn't that bad. It was fine. I should have just done it.
Well, and that's why I have my clients institute what I call the weekly money date. And if you're an entrepreneur, you need to also be doing this in your business. So I call that your CEO time in your business, yeah, where you set aside that time. And depending on how complicated your business is, I mean, it might be like 15 minutes a week where you just pop into your accounting system, check on your bank account, crunch those numbers, and then it's behind you, because you can't make good decisions if you don't know what your numbers are, either on the personal side or the professional side.
So true. So true. I think that's why a lot of authors started veering towards having tools that could keep track of everything too. Like, you know, for most fiction writers, we have something like called Author Helper Suite, and it pulls in like all the financials from all the different sites. And then we can overlay that with our ads or like any other kind of spending. And then you can see like in real time, you know, were the ads working? Are the books being successful this week or this month? Are you earning a net profit versus, you know, going into the hole? So I think we do want to do that. We want to understand it better, but we're not always the best at it. We would much rather be writing.
Of course.
Yeah. It's like, go figure. So what would you say is the most critical financial habit that authors need to develop in order to succeed financially?
Well, I think it's that money date. It's spending that quality time with your money. And there's no shame in getting someone to help you with that. Now, that doesn't have to be someone that you're paying. It doesn't have to be hiring a financial coach. It might be, but it could be if you have a money smart friend or family member that can sit down and help you with this. And I mean, really just getting organized and getting your system set up, I think that's really half the battle, which is one of the reasons why I built that into my coaching package. Yeah. So when new clients come to me, that's, you know, within the first 60 days, we're getting them set up on a personal finance app. And I do all the heavy lifting. Like, people are like, I don't want to do the budget. I'm like, I'm going to put all your numbers in there. I'm going to show you how to use this. And we use it during the whole course of coaching together, so that by the time they graduate out, they know how to use the tool. And we've built in the habit of using it weekly and logging in and checking things, et cetera. So it really is building that habit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so smart. So what are the common financial misconceptions that you've encountered with creative professionals? Like, how do you address those in your coaching?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons why I wrote my second book, Manage Money Like a Boss, because it is for creative entrepreneurs, because most of them would tell me, Christine, I've like tried to read money books and I get like one page in and I'm falling asleep. And so, you know, to me, it's like, okay, how can we explain these things in a way that honors their creativity and gives them the tools to manage money? And so one of the shifts I like to do with my entrepreneurial clients is to have them imagine that money is their employee. Mm. So what was the last job you worked at where you actually had a boss?
I was like a marketing professional, worked at, as marketing. Yeah.
Okay. So just imagine that you were at your old job and you had finished up whatever projects you had on your plate, and you walked into your boss's office and you said, "Hey, I'm all caught up on everything. What would you like me to do?" And your boss hid under his or her desk until you went away. Like, that would be so weird.
Honestly, right? My boss was kind of like that. I can't say she was all that great.
But like, this, that'd be weird, right? Because you're like, okay, I guess I'll go back to my desk and, you know, play on Facebook or Instagram until I have to
write my
home.
Book. I'll just write my book in the home. That's fine.
Exactly. But at some point, if you had a boss like that, you would go to work for somebody else. Because really, as an employee, you want to be proactively managed. You want your boss to respect you. You want that person to spend quality time with you, and you want them to give you direction on what they're supposed to be doing for the company, right?
Yeah.
Your money wants the same thing. And so what I find with a lot of entrepreneurs is that they want to just do the art, whether right. it's the writing, the creating, the painting, and they see the money portion of it as a necessary evil.
Yep.
But really, money can either be your best employee or your worst nightmare. So if you're not proactively managing it, and when you think about it, you know, the responsibilities of having your own business is you are the boss.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you have to be the boss of these things. And, you know, that's really what it comes down to, is how well are you going to manage money? And it doesn't have to be hard. This is the thing that people think, it's got to be hard. It's got to be boring. It can't be fun. You can make your money date as fun as you want to. So it can be in the evening with a glass of wine, with some classical music playing, and, you know, some scented candle. You can make it feel like a literal date night. Or, I mean, for me, it's usually I have my coffee on Saturday morning, and I'll have some, you know, rose essential oil diffusing, and I'll have some of my favorite music playing, and I make it as pleasant as possible. So you don't have to go down to your basement and sit at a card table in a folding chair with like a bare bulb hanging from the ceiling, and, you know, be working away on your laptop. It doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to right. be something that you dread. We can infuse pleasure into the money date, and we can make it fun.
I so agree with that. That's typically what I'll try to do myself. Like I do the same thing where it's like coffee in hand, I have music playing, you know, something that is more uplifting. I have like a kick-ass playlist is what it is. So it's like I have that Love going it. So it like amps me up. So I'm like, yes, I can do this like a badass. It's good.
Yes. I love it.
And then before I know it, it's done. And I was like, why was I complaining about that? It took like an hour and that was it.
Yes. Well, and the more frequently you do it, the less time it takes.
True.
So for me, I usually, it's usually 1 to 2 weeks for me. I don't like going any more than 2 weeks. And this is coming from someone who has the vast majority of their stuff automated. My husband and I are doing extremely well financially, so we've got lots of margin built in. It's not like I have to be watching my checking account so closely because I don't want to overdraw it. But what I know is when you become disconnected from things, that's when stuff starts slipping through the cracks. Like, you know, those subscriptions that you meant to cancel, and, you know, you're just like not even mindful or aware of what you're spending. And that's usually the first thing that people start to discover when we start using the personal finance app together. All of a sudden they're like, well, what is that? Oh, I thought I canceled that. I don't even use that anymore. But when you're not paying attention, it's almost like having all these little tiny holes in the bottom of your rowboat, right? So you're trying to row across the lake and you're like, I don't understand what's going on. And it's not like there's some big gaping hole, but your boat, so to speak, is taking on water because of all these little things that are very easy to overlook if you're not paying attention.
Sure. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
I see that.
But
yeah.
once you start plugging those up, all of a sudden, once you start rowing, you start making a lot of progress.
Right? Right?
Yeah.
It makes so sense. Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned the app a couple of times. What app are you referring to?
Yeah. So the last time I mentioned an app publicly, it went away.
Oh. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. I was using Mint, which a lot of people are familiar with, because it was around forever. And I was like, okay, this is the one I'm going to use because it's been around forever. It's not going anywhere. And then I'm like, oh, crap, it's going somewhere.
Oh, no.
So I will say the app, it's called Monarch Money. There's a cost to it. I think it's like $9 a month is what I pay for myself. And I pay for my clients for the first year to have the app, but it is money definitely well spent for sure.
How is it different than from like QuickBooks? Out of curiosity, is it like a budgeting app?
Yeah, so this is strictly for your personal finances. And what I like about it is it's a complete dashboard. So most of us are spending money from a lot of different buckets. So we're using debit cards, credit cards, Venmo, Apple Pay, all of that good stuff. And if you're married, it's like, well, you know, if you've got a combination of combined accounts and separate accounts, it's hard to know, well, what are we really spending on eating out if it's, you know, if we're using several different credit cards and bank accounts to do it. You connect all of your accounts and it basically aggregates everything all into one place. So you can see everything that you're spending on dining out or everything that you're spending on medical expenses, et cetera. And the other cool thing about it is that it helps couples to communicate a lot better because you can share the app. So if you sign up for the app, you invite your spouse, you can both see what's going on.
Right.
So if your spouse is like, I was thinking about going out to lunch, well, they can just pull the app up. And if they're like, ooh, we only have $30 left for eating out, like, maybe I won't go out.
Right, right.
Or maybe I'll drive through Taco Bell instead of going somewhere else.
Right. Maybe I'll see if I have a gift card from someplace instead. I don't know.
Yeah. But what I love about it is that you see the whole financial picture. So you see all your spending, you see all of your debt, you see all of your assets, your entire net worth. It will track your spending trends over time. It will track your net worth changes over time. And the more information you have, I feel like the better decisions you're going to make. The other thing too is that sometimes we don't realize how much progress we've made until we have a tool like that that actually shows us.
Right.
Because when we're in the day to day, it can feel like we're not making very much progress. But then when you look back over several months or you look back over a year, all of a sudden you're like, whoa, we really improved our net worth by a huge chunk this year. Like, I didn't even realize that, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's a good feeling too. It's almost like when you start a workout program and you let go of like the expectations of anything. The next thing you know, 6 months later, you're like, hey, check that out. I actually have muscles again. It's great.
Yeah, so it's like, oh my gosh, my skinny jeans are like baggy. Woo!
What just happened? Yes. Well, obviously with authors, there's like this weird dynamic with book sales and royalties where things kind of go up and down and it's not always like very stable, I guess.
Right.
Do you have any advice to give authors on how to manage that aspect of the business?
Yes. I have a system that I teach my clients who have variable income. And really the first step is understanding what are your baseline expenses in your family finances on a monthly basis? And what are your baseline expenses on a monthly basis in your business? Because that's really going to give you the target of what do I need to pay myself at a minimum every month? And how much cash do I need on hand in my business for these various ongoing costs, right? Because you talked about the software that authors have, like there's a cost to that, right? And you have to figure that in. And many people have not figured out, they call that your overhead. What is that expense that's hanging over your head every month? So as soon as the month begins and you're at zero revenue, these expenses are hanging over your head and you've got to bring in enough money to cover those. So really just identifying what is that number on the personal side? What is that number on the business side? And then you can look over your past history for your cash flow in your business to see, okay, this is a good starting point to figure that out. And then I will have my clients calculate it's basically like a buffer account. It's not an emergency savings account. It's completely separate from that. And so I like to call it your cash flow cushion account. So you have this account and you identify, okay, here's the bare minimum that I need each and every month for my personal. And you can have two of these. You can have one for your business and one for your personal if you want to. And you can just say, all right, this is how much I need to bring to the family finances every month. Now, if you have a spouse who is working a paycheck job, be grateful for that person because, right, you know that that chunk is coming in, right, each and every month. And you're like, okay, so this chunk is coming in. How much do I need to bring in? And then you can say, all right, what was my biggest stretch of shortfall? So if you look back over the last 12 to 24 months and you say, okay, well, I need to bring a minimum of $3,000 to the family finances every month. And you can see that you had several months in a row where you had a shortfall. Well, what was that total shortfall? Let's get that into a savings account as quickly as we can. When we're in our months, I call them your fat months, right? You have fat months and you have skinny months. So in your fat months, you need to have some discipline to take some of that and put that into that cash flow cushion account.
Right.
And then once it's fully funded, its sole purpose is for you to take it out when you need it. So don't feel guilty about pulling out of that account. Because I've had people say like, oh my gosh, this and this happened and I had to pull it from my cash cushion account. And I'm like, yay, you had a cash cushion account. You didn't have to put that on a credit card.
Right, right. So speaking of credit cards then, so would you recommend getting the cushion account done first and then worry about the debt or vice versa?
I like to have the cash cushion first because if you don't have the cash cushion, it makes it hard to pay down the card, right? So obviously you're going to pay at least the minimum dues on your credit cards while you're getting that cash flow up. You know, some people like to do both at the same time. There's rarely a right way to do it.
Yeah.
It's
just
really
what feels good.
Yes. I mean, it really is. And people are like, but what about the math? And I'm like, look, if you're not going to stick with something, the math doesn't matter.
Right? So
it doesn't. Because people say like, well, the mathematically correct way to pay off your debt is to pick the one with the highest interest rate first. And I'm like, well, if that doesn't feel good to you because that debt is ginormous, it's going to take you 4 years to pay off. If it feels better for you to knock off these four or five little credit card bills so that you actually are crossing things off your list, I don't care what the interest rate is. I care what is going to motivate you to stick with this. That's the most important thing.
So good. I agree with you on that because there are definitely times where I've seen friends or family members do the same thing where it's like, I've got my charts and here's the one that I got to pay off and this is when it should be paid off by. And they do it, you know, for a couple of months and then they fall off the wagon because it feels like trying to write a book without having an outline.
I'm never going to get this done, right? That's what it feels like. Right. Yeah. But if you have a list of all your chapters and you can cross those off your list, you know, like that feels better.
Yeah,
and sometimes you do need to have those little, those micro goals. So if you're looking at like that cash flow cushion account and you're like, holy crap, I got to have like $10,000 in that account. Well, let's make your first goal to be 1,000.
Yeah.
And get 1,000 in there as fast as you can. And then let's look at the second goal, because sometimes when you look at a goal that's very big and you don't chunk it down, you're just like, that's never going to happen. So I'm not even going to try.
Right. Yeah. The confused mind does nothing.
Yes, exactly.
I completely understand. So how can authors set realistic financial goals for themselves? Do you have any techniques or anything to stay motivated with it other than what we just discussed?
Well, I really think the micro goals for sure, but I also, and you have talked about this in the mastermind I'm in with you, is why do you want this goal? Because you can't do it just because I'm supposed to do this. Like, I'm supposed to want this. I'm supposed to want to be debt-free.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. It's like, I want to be debt-free so that I will have the money freed up so my family can go to Europe.
Yeah, that feels way better.
Exactly.
That feels way better. Yeah, so find your motivating why so that you can enjoy the process of doing it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And then chunk it down and say, okay, what is it going to take? And The other thing I love is the exercise that you taught, I believe it was in your free masterclass, about it was basically like creating the to-do list for you and the universe.
Right.
So it's like, okay, universe, I want to be debt-free. Here's all the practical things that I need to be doing. Here's all the other things that you could be doing for me that I have no control over.
Yes.
Right. So you can ask and call your credit card company and see if they'll lower the rate. Your job is the call.
Yeah.
The outcome of that call and whether or not they're going to give you a better rate, that's the universe's job.
Yep.
But if you never call,
you'll never know.
Right. Then you're stuck.
Yeah, you still have to take that inspired action step to get there for sure. And I loved in Money is Emotional, you gave an example too of like, you know, if you are obviously with creative entrepreneurs, we only get paid typically like through Amazon once a month. It's like the 29th, right? And so then you're, you know, hit or slammed with a lot of stuff with that first paycheck, that only paycheck. And so you mentioned, you know, you could call your credit card companies or your different debt places, whatever they are. Maybe it's, you know, whatever it is, call them and just say, hey, can I move my deadline or my due date, you know, back 2 weeks or whatever? I'm like, that's so smart because it's like, and it's so simple.
Just if you don't ask, the answer is no. So just ask. The worst thing is they'll tell you no and you'll be no better off than you are right now.
And no worse off either. You'll be right
exactly.
Right there.
There's no downside.
Right. I love that. That was really good. Okay. So we alluded a little bit in the beginning about the fact that you're writing a new book. So do you want to tell my audience a little bit about it and when to expect it?
Yes. So the new book is called Provider Money, Pleasure Money, The Energetics of Personal Finance.
Love it.
And this is really the first time that I have talked about energetics relative to finance. And, you know, 2.5 years ago, I joined a mastermind, a business mastermind, where the person who taught it was like really introduced me to feminine and masculine energy in the way that I understand it now. And I was like, oh, like I've been teaching about this without really knowing what it was. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, once it was like the veil was lifted and I understood, I was like, oh my gosh, I could just like, it was almost like the veil was lifted and I could see how everything was all interconnected.
Love that.
Yeah. And when it comes to personal finance, we have that, you know, the provider money is like that safety net. It's boring. It's practical. But it's necessary. The pleasure money is like the trapeze swing, right? That's the thrilling part. That's the fun part. But we can't really have like the circus trapeze without those two pieces of equipment. Because if you have the trapeze swing with no net, that's not fun. That's freaking terrifying.
Right? You better be good at what you do.
And if you have a net with no swing, then you've completely missed the point. So there is that interplay between the two of them. And I talk about, you know, how can you really evaluate those two pieces of your personal finances? How can you balance them so that they work together? Because really, you want to, when you spend money, you want to feel positive and peaceful. You don't want to feel fear,
right?
Or regret, you know?
Or trapped. I know a lot of authors feel trapped by their like cycle. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, I want to go and do this thing, but am I spending this money that I'm going to need for groceries? Or did I just spend my mortgage payments? And so really understanding that and how it flows through all the different areas of your personal finance, it's much less of a how-to book, and it's more of a philosophy of money, a different way of looking at your personal finances.
Well, it sounds like it's going to complement everything really, really well. So, I mean, if you've read the other books, then this is going to go hand in hand with it. So that I'm looking forward to this. So when did you say that this is coming out later this year?
Yeah, so we don't have the exact publication. It'll be July sometime of 2024, in case somebody is binging your podcast a year later. However, some people are going to get a sneak peek at it. And the women who are going to be joining the Wealthy Woman Book Club, which debuts a little, basically within a week of us recording this, and actually the day it comes out, it's going to be open and ready for enrollment. They're going to get to read it first before anybody else, which is pretty cool.
So good. Oh, that was my last question. So you're developing this Wealthy Woman Book Club. Can you tell us about like how it is and why you wanted to, number one, create the opportunity, and what kind of content or discussions can members expect if they join?
Yeah, well, you know, in most book clubs, reading the book is the point. But in the Wealthy Woman Book Club, the book is the jumping off point. It's the impetus for us to have deeper conversations about money, for reflection on our own personal finances, for generosity, for, you know, making positive change and social impact in the world. So yes, we are going to be reading a money book together each and every month. We're going to be having discussions about it. We're going to have, you know, journal questions so everybody can reflect and we can share those things together. And then we're also going to be coming together at least once a month live. And this is the only opportunity that non-coaching clients can actually get coaching from me directly. So they can ask me something that the book stirred up in them, that maybe they've gotten a question about how this applies to them or a particular situation, or it could be something not even related to that. But I really wanted to launch this to empower women. You know, this is for women who already are wealthy and they want to help other women and they want to contribute to that positive change, or women who think they might want to be wealthy and they're not afraid to admit it.
Right.
Because there is some stigma around that. And so I wanted this community to be that safe place where we can talk about our money wins and our successes, and we can talk about our failures, and we can show up and have these real conversations without fear that we're going to be judged or going to be shamed. So that's really what the Wealthy Woman Book Club is all about.
I love that. Okay, so you said that enrollment starts on the 17th of April. When does the actual book club itself start? So when does the enrollment end and when does it start?
So it is open enrollment forever.
Oh, okay. So you can just join whenever you want. Got it.
You can join whenever you want. It is a year commitment. So if you're going to jump in, we want you to be there for a year. The cost is relatively low. So because it will be evolving and changing over time, we're not going to talk pricing, but it's probably much less than you would expect. Cool. We are going to start reading Provider Money, Pleasure Money May 1st. So
good.
Oh, so I got to finish it now.
And now the energetics of writing a book come into play.
Oh my gosh. No, I was adding like last minute. I'm like, oh, this is a really good juicy story. I got to put this in. So I am putting my final tweaks on it. And it's funny because I'm going to be turning it over to my line editor at the same time that everybody's going to get the book. So if you jump in, don't be super critical. If you find a typo, let me know. That'd be great.
You are, but that's not your job. Enjoy.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's so cool. And I remember wasn't it Heather who recommended that? She was like, she's also in our mastermind, was like, Christine, you need to do this. And we were all like, oh, yes.
Yes, because we were going to do Money is Emotional first, because I thought, you know, this is such a good foundational book to start with. And then she said, what if we started with this one? And that way they get it before everyone else. And I'm like, I just like knew in my spirit. I was like, oh, that is so good.
Right. I did too. I was like, oh, I wish I would have been able to be the one to come up with that. But Heather is amazing. She comes up with like some of the most awesome ideas. I love her. She's so great. Okay, so Christine, where can my audience go to find out more about you, find out more about your books, get enrolled in the Wealthy Woman Book Club? Where do they go?
Yeah, well, the easiest place to go is my website, which is christinelukin.com. It's just my name. You'll see all the links up at the top for my books, for the book club. If it's the book club, it's wealthywomanbookclub.com. And I'm on all the major social media platforms. So just look up my name and you'll find me.
Heck yes. I love it. Thank you, Christine, for being here today and sharing all of your wisdom. So, I mean, I obviously we could pick your brain for days, but for the wisdom you shared today, I appreciate it so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I loved it.
Well, guys, like I said, I am so excited to be part of the Wealthy Woman Book Club. I have enrolled already. I'm excited for it. If it sounds like something that you are excited about too, I hope that you're going to join us. It's going to be so much fun to be able to talk with like-minded individuals about money and to see and try new things and new ways when it comes to my money. And I'm sure for you, it will be as well. It's like over the years, I've gotten very used to managing money in a very specific way, but it doesn't always work for me the way that I want it to, right? I think we all have those things. You can be good at earning money. You could be good at manifesting what you need. And then sometimes you just go through a new season where it's like, you know, it really feels good to think about the idea of having savings accounts that are going to be just for this, or it feels really good to pay down debt. Like we have those seasons, right? Where all of a sudden something feels better. It feels like the next logical step. It feels good, right? And so sometimes that's even a manifestation itself. You're over here going, oh, I like how I'm doing things, but I want it to be better. And so then it comes down to like, maybe you don't need to do something bigger or grandiose. Maybe you just need to do better with the things that you already have, right? So have systems in place to make your money do more for you, to support you in new and different ways. And I really think that's what these books that Christine has written are showcasing really well for women and couples. Honestly, she does have books about bringing your spouse in, bringing your partner in. And that's a valuable and important part of it as well. But for women entrepreneurs and authors, I think just having a place for us to look at money in a slightly different manner, there's something magical there. And I can't wait to see and explore all the things that we're going to do over this next year. I'm really excited about it. So at any rate, I hope you enjoyed this podcast interview. I hope you enjoyed meeting Christine and hearing what she's up to, what she's all about. I'm super stoked to have brought her on the show. I'm super stoked to have her as a student in my programs. And I hope that you check everything out, her books included. Just head over to the show notes at authorrevolution.org/232. All the links will be there. I will make sure everything's ready to rock and roll. And just remember, like, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear, right? And so to me, I think Christine is definitely one of my teachers. She's someone who is going to be introducing me to a new way of looking at money, of managing the money I do have coming in, and making it work more for me so that I can enjoy time and space a little bit more. And I think all of us need a little bit more of that too, right? So head over to those show notes if you want to get the transcript, if you want to head over to the links and check out the Wealthy Woman Book Club or all the things, whatever it is. And in the meantime, just think about what Christine was talking about. Is this stuff something that really has been resonating with you? Are you feeling like you need to manage your money better, to give it more direction on where to go, to, you know, be the boss to that employee of money? I love that analogy. Are you ready to just, you know, take some new steps into new directions when it comes to managing your money as an entrepreneur? I hope so. And I hope that you enjoyed this episode. So, with all further ado, go forth and start your author revolution. Okay, indie author, Carissa Andrews with Author Revolution here. We need to have a chat. I know you want to build a sustainable long-term author career, but you can't do it just by wishing for it. It would be nice, yes, but alas, you gotta do the work.
By that, I mean you need to reframe the way you look at your author business so that you can write and publish more frequently. With Rapid Release Roadmap, my signature online course, I'll help you learn not only how to make writing and publishing 4 books a year seem easy, but I'll help you master your prolific author mindset so that you can clear away all the negative self-talk that's holding you back. Trust me, I have been there. To learn more about Rapid Release Roadmap, head over to rapidreleaseroadmap.com. Over there, I'll give you all the insights on what you'll find inside the course. Plus, I walk you through all of the bonuses you're going to get based on the payment option you choose. And yes, there are some good ones in there, even if I say so myself. Once again, head over to rapidreleaseroadmap.com to learn more and sign up today.